This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Literally Gaysians.
Bao and Chris here.
Hello, hello, hello.
How was Folsom? How was Folsom, Chris?
Oh my God, it was exhausting. It was like the four times everybody was out. The energy was up there. It was exciting. I got to wear my new outfit. I felt all the emotions. I was happy, sad, envious, a little roller coaster, but I'm just like now on Friday after Folsom, like recovered, feel like I can actually wake up in time. Yeah, that was a long week.
Wait, why were you sad?
Huh? Oh, it's just, you know, sad that the drugs didn't work.
It's time to take a break. Well, you said you would take a break after Folsom.
Yeah. What about you? How's your job search?
Not so great. Okay. If you're asking me today, fucking sucks. Today, specifically, I got two hard no's. And then earlier during the week, I had two other roles frozen. So they weren't even open anymore. And they just like were rescinded. And that's on top of like six other no's and countless like no responses. So it fucking sucks. I know how lucky and privileged I am. I've had a really great career, even being able to get my foot in the door to get these interviews. But it's like super competitive out there right now.
It's hard out here for a pimp.
It is. These pimps have 20 years of experience, man. Like that's so much more than me. Like these two roles that I was in final rounds for, I went to people with 20 years of experience. And you know how my parents are just like, well, just go for whatever job's going to pay you. Like you don't need to make this much. You don't have to have that kind of job anymore. For me, it's sort of like still hanging on and believing deeply in my worth and what I know I can get. And I know better now. Like I know better than to take a job that I'm going to hate or take a job with a manager that I get weird vibes from, or like maybe the role is good, but the company has been shitty. And that's something I've done before. And so I feel kind of bratty and privileged that it sucks, but it just really just fucking sucks.
I don't know. I'm starting to move out of that going, I think it's a hard time. I think we might need to shift our, not about like our self-worth, but we might just start to need to make money.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I couldn't go to Folsom. I'm like, I really shouldn't go on another trip. I really should focus on this job search. And I'm also kind of trying this new thing where when it's a hard time and I might be anxious, I'm not going to go party when I'm anxious. Just trying to sit through the discomfort. And when the anxiety comes, trying to deal with it in the moment. Or else if I try to ball it up or try to like distract myself from it, it comes back in like full force. During an acid trip or something, or like during a K-hole, and that's just not fun anymore to me. So I'm just trying to lay low and really focus on this.
Oh my God. And speaking of K-holes, sorry to those two people who came up to me at Folsom and I was in a K-hole. You tried to talk to me about the podcast. I think I was kind of rude, but I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if I could even see your faces that were melting in front of me. That is all.
So I hope you still listen to the podcast, those fans. But just to wallow in our own victimhood, just a little bit more. In our scarcity mindset, just even further, because hello, generational trauma.
Maybe because we're just trash people.
Yes, because in addition to not having jobs, don't you? What else don't we have?
Boyfriends.
We don't. We've been single for years, or in between boyfriends, as we like to call it. And this means years of saying no when the waiter asks, anyone else joining you?
Or years of ordering Blue Apron for two, but eating it all by myself in one sitting.
Or for me, like putting your ex, dad, or sister as your emergency contact when you go to Barry's or SoulCycle.
And for me, years of looking longingly at the carpool lane.
Yes, yes. But the thing is, one of the requests that we get a lot to talk about on our show is boyfriends. How to navigate boyfriends and relationships in 2023. How to navigate the differences, mixed race dating, open relationships.
Is this us like preparing for 2024? Basically, things you and I have no recent experience in. We haven't been partners since the 20s time.
The what?
Yeah, I said it. It's fine. Don't worry. Don't go back to that. Edit it out.
But we do have a lot of questions, though. Do you want a boyfriend, Chris?
You know, I spent most of my 30s when we were out, like, having a lot of fun. I was, like, very anti-boyfriend. I felt very independent woman. I blame Beyonce for that. But now, in the last few years, as I approached my late 30s, especially when I hit, like, 40, 41, I was like, that came to this realization. I think I do want a boyfriend now.
I do feel like for like a good 12 years in my 20s, I had like consecutive long-term relationships. I was like the Navy SEAL of codependency. I wanted to really take a break from that though, especially with my last ex. And we talked about this, I think, on an earlier episode, just like taking a break to work on my own shit, maybe for a year or two. Two things happened. First, the pandemic. And two, maybe I was just obsessed with trying to perfectly clear out my baggage and all my own shit before trying to date again that I looked up and like 4 years passed by. So, I mean, I'm dating now, but it's harder in your 30s, not just because like maybe we're older, but also like it's harder after you've worked on some shit because the problem is you know better now. Like you go on dates, you kind of just know better. You meet guys and you realize like you're attracted to the guys. You go on second or third dates with the guys that you have, that you're experiencing like the same patterns that you've had before with your exes and isn't good for you. And so I wonder if that's like me recognizing patterns in myself or just like finding another reason not to date somebody or putting up another wall.
It's called having standards.
Yes. Or walls.
Well, then, today we're going to have a show on boyfriends. So we invited real life boyfriends onto the show to talk about it.
Or maybe their fiancés. Or like technically maybe their husbands already. I don't know. We'll find out. Because we somehow convinced them to come onto the show to talk about what partnered life is like in this day and age.
There are friends, Justin and Jason, who live right here in SF. And they're joining to talk to us about how they knew they were each other's person and what it's like to navigate their worlds as a mixed race couple.
So we need to get to them real quick before they change their minds and hop off the podcast. So let's start the show.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome to Literally Gaysians.
Thank you for having us. But we have a quick question. Neither one of us have ever done K before, but you just said when you were in a K hole, you couldn't see people's faces.
You said they were melting.
You said they were melting?
Sometimes it was really dark. It was one of those parties that had a lot of, like a dungeon and lots of red light. And I got a little too far in on accident. Someone gave me some stuff. I wasn't paying attention. And suddenly I felt like I was in circuit purgatory. Like, just there were no exits. There was just shirtless men in straps everywhere, and everyone looked the same. So I just didn't know where I was, and I was freaking out.
Feel like this normally.
And so people came up to me, and I think my vision was definitely distorted, because I just got a little too deep into it. They were so sweet. They're like, "Oh, we love your podcast." I'm like, yeah. So good to see you. I'm going to be over there in that corner. Bye. Enough about me, because that was super embarrassing. Back to you. How long have y'all been together? How'd you meet?
This December will make 5 years, so just shy of that. So like 4 years and 9 months.
Yeah. December 2018.
We met on Grindr.
Actually, the night that we met is one of my favorite stories to tell in general. I was on my way to a gala. I lived in Koreatown at the time in LA, and Justin lived in Palms, and he was like having dinner or lunch or something in Koreatown. So I hit him up on Grindr, and then he was like, "Oh, I'm in Koreatown now." I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm actually going to Culver City, so I won't be able to like hang out right now, but maybe later on tonight, I'll just make sure I'll hit you up." So when I got back to my place, or when I was on my way back to my place in the Uber, I asked Justin to come over, and it was like the end of my like hoe phase. So I had my favorite fuckboy game, which was basically this card game that I learned when I was really, really young called Tonk. Where you just play this card game, and I would add like the question and answer, or I'm sorry, truth or dare, as the consequence if you like lose a round. So I played the first two hands, I won the first two hands, and then by then I was like, "Hey, can we add the consequence of truth or dare? Let's see how it goes." Typically for me, it's like, cool, I get to know something about the person, and I eventually get them naked, and you know, things happen. This time. We play, and I lose 16 hands in a row. So for 2 hours,
counted?
I lose. Yes, I counted.
Oh.
And Justin had me asking me really deep questions, which was really, really, really great. And then he also had me doing like push-ups and singing and like doing model walks and nothing sexual, which
I'm actually like notoriously bad at hookups. I just like will talk about anything and everything except getting to the actual point of it. Right.
So, which is exactly what happened. And I was like, "Oh, like this is going longer than I expected it to." Not like the encounter, but like the card game part of this encounter.
I mean, you brought it up.
I did, because normally I win. I'm really good at cards.
I'm better though. You're better.
But eventually we ended up like just not hooking up that night and just talking till like 5 a.m. and like naked cuddling. It was really, really lovely. So that was our first night together.
Aww.
Yeah.
When I was on my way there, I always like looked to see like, oh, he lives right across from the school, so he's not on like the sexual predator list.
Oh.
So that's the first thing I was thought about.
I've heard a lot of people meet on Grindr. I feel like maybe like Grindr has less of that pressure, or is it just like you were expecting a hookup and got an amazing connection instead?
I think it's low expectations is the key.
Wow.
for the moment, not the person. I'm sorry.
No, I totally get it. Maybe I'm going to take Grindr a little bit more serious.
I feel like now it's more of like just a social networking app.
Yeah.
I feel like, because people who really want to hook up use sniffies.
I had to explain the idea of sniffies to somebody this weekend, because he was like telling me, "Hey, I went to H Mart and I needed to use the bathroom. So I went into a stall and used the bathroom, but the security guard just kept kicking down every stall and telling like, if you're peeing, you can't pee in here." And he's like, "That's so strange." So I like wrote a complaint to H Mart, and I'm like, "You know why they're doing that, right?" And it's the H Mart on Western. And I'm like, "Oh, cause I'm on Sniffies all the time." And you could tell that H Mart is a cruising place. You know, as on Sniffies, they show you the cruising places,
exactly.
Either it's a park, like the gym is like, "Oh, and from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. use the sauna." And that H Mart bathroom is happening. It's just like lots of security, but some fun cruising in this bathroom. And he's like, what is Sniffies? And I'm like, "I want to show you, but like if I show you my one picture, it's gonna pop up. And it's me in a weird position. Let me just kind of open this very fast and just like scroll to, and then I was able to show him and explain it to him, and he's like, wait, this is just a map of dicks and buttholes. I'm like, that is accurate. Yeah.
That's sniffy.
Oh my God, that's going to be your memoir, Cruising at H Mart.
Copyright that right now. That's going to be our merch. That could be our merch to like the for the two people that we're going to force to buy it. Cruising at
H Mart. So good. So good. So good.
All right. Well, let me fast forward to this week, or when this episode comes out, which is next week. You have an exciting week. Why? What's happening next week, guys?
So me and Justin are getting married in October, October 20th, here at San Francisco City Hall. We're excited about it. So I was asking Justin, like, how he wanted to do the wedding and the whole, like, shebang. And, like, he came up with this idea of us going on a, like, tour of receptions. Like, hitting all the major cities with all the people that like really shaped us and like who made us who we are. And I thought that was such a great idea, mainly because I get to go back to the East Coast because I'm from Virginia, and I get to see my people and my folks there and not make them have to pay an arm and a leg, you know, to come to San Francisco to like celebrate us. And then we also get to go up to DC, and then we're going to New York City. He has a lot of good friends in Boston, so we'll be making a stop in Boston.
That's nice.
And then we'll come back to San Francisco, get married, have our San Francisco gathering, and then we'll end it all in LA, where we met at his brother's house, having another gathering there. So we're having a tour of receptions over the month of October, and they all start October 7th. Yeah, 7th.
Yeah, next week. Yeah. Is it like wild trying to like plan all these little receptions?
I think in net, it is less decisions than an actual wedding day. Mm-hmm. Just because you have to decide so many things about like decor, music, like what kind of food, place, time, after things. And then now we have 6 different places where we're meeting people for dinner. But really it's just that every restaurant, we're just like, yeah, you just go to the restaurant and be like, what do you serve for a group of 20? And then that's it.
Is this like the new young thing to do? I've been noticing like young couples getting married, instead of doing the giant destination wedding, it's many destination weddings for the couple. It saves on their family. And what I think I've noticed is that a lot of people don't want their biological families partying with their chosen families. So they separate them, and it just makes everyone that much happier.
I think it's easier to separate because like there's always that weird mingling that happens at weddings of all the different people that you know in your life ever. Mm-hmm. And they have to pretend to like each other and then pretend to connect. And like I have exchanged Instagrams with so many people that I have never ever talked to before, like and like we'll never ever talk to ever again, because you know we're there for a weekend, we get to know each other, we talk for like 3 hours, and then our lives separate, right? Mm-hmm. But now we get to celebrate with our people,
yeah. That's like dating or meeting guys in LA. Like you go to the club, you meet, chat with them, and then you just look at each other's stories for the rest of your lives until you die.
Okay, so that brings me to, how did we all meet then?
So Jason moved up. We met in LA, and then he quickly was like, hey, I got a job in San Francisco, like just a few months later. And I was like, cool, I'm not moving with you. But he moved up first, and I was visiting him. We were doing, like, I guess, short, long distance, because LA SF's not that far, but so I was visiting, and then we were at Lookout, and that is your favorite place, Val and Chris.
We love some Lookout. Yeah, you know, we used to make fun of the Lookout when we were in our 20s, like, look at all those old people up there on a Sunday. We became those people.
you have that little back, like the back corner bar corner, like that is your spot. And every single time Jason and I go there, we see like Chris and Val, like your whole group of friends out hanging out there. And we're like, oh, okay. But like we were going there one time. Jason left to go get a drink. I was waiting around there. He made me stay there.
It was intentional. It was like a corner, and it was predominantly just your group of friends or just Gaysians in that corner. And I was like, Justin, like, go meet your people, like go hang out. Like, I'll walk away so I don't have to like be a bother. And so I went to go get a drink, and then Justin texts me. He's like,
I hate this. Please come back. Like, because no one was talking to him. He was just standing by himself. And then by the time I got there, Bao and I think your friend Moni were starting to talk to Justin there. And Justin didn't realize that he actually met Moni at the bathroom line at, like, Rise the night before.
Not in that way.
Like, no, in the bathroom line, just waiting.
That makes it seem like it was more nefarious than it was.
The bathroom line at Rise is very long, and in people are just blowing ass, and it is not a, and doing blow.
It's not sexy.
It's not sexy at all. Yeah.
No one has sex in that bathroom. Maybe people do. We'll clear that up for you, everybody.
Good to know. And then from then on, we like hung out during that day. And then I think Chris, you were there the same day as well. So we all like met around the same time.
And through the years, I think we've gotten a little closer. I think for me, it was you guys visit LA a lot, because I moved to LA like literally, really seriously shortly after you had moved to San Francisco, Jason. Mm-hmm. And then I think Justin, you joined him a little bit later. And then I think it was the pandemic. We had this like Halloween party. You had a Halloween party, and you guys invited me. And I wore my like
days of the COVID.
the days of the COVID. Oh yeah, sorry. Maybe we should. Yeah, well, maybe in 2021. No. We'll say this is 2021.
No, it's fine. I was making a joke to the gays over COVID Instagram.
Yeah,
feed.
That was always the rule. You're not allowed to post this. Don't get caught on gays over COVID.
It was always that everybody was like having parties, but nobody was allowed to post
anything about him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. If I do remember correctly, I did confirm a negative COVID test, but
no, you're all good.
We were all negative. It was a very fine, great time without COVID being around.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun like with you guys there. I met your friends there, and then like you know, and we just continued to hang out. But let's get to know you both maybe individually, like who you were before you met each other. So Justin, why don't we start with you?
Who was I before we had met each other? Teaching, I had just gotten back from 5 years living in Boston.
Tell them why you were in Boston.
I was teaching in Boston, and then I went to, and then I took a year off to travel through Latin America just to like, take time, mental health break from work. Moved back to LA because my brother lives there. My parents were kind of inland. And then, I don't know, I wasn't really looking to date. I was just like, oh, this is going to be me learning to love myself and do this whole thing. Like, make gay friends, because I had like two gay friends at that point.
So you're saying you went to fuck your way through Latin America?
Yes, but no. And then all of a sudden, this was not supposed to be a relationship. And then we started dating each other. That's who I was before.
How about you, Jason?
It's funny because the reason why I asked him, like, why was he in Boston is because we have, like, a similar path with our exes. Like, we moved across the country with them and for them. So I was living in, I'm from Virginia. Then I was living in New York, going to grad school while I started dating a med student there. He got residency at UCLA. So then I moved across country with him. I was like, I always wanted to live in California for a little bit to see how it was going. I expected to move back right after residency back to New York City. That's what was our plan. We made it together until the end of his second year of residency. Then we broke up. And then I was like, I'm still already in California. I really, really enjoy it out here. I will try to make it work. And by that time, Justin had just moved back to LA from Boston, and he was starting to teach there, and I was going through again my hoe phase, I would say, because I was like rather a serial monogamous. Like, I had like one boyfriend from in college for like 4 years, and then I had another boyfriend for about 4.5 years, and then I was like, I've never been like single and gay in like a big city, so like let's see how that goes. And then I met Justin on the last day, not of the phase completing, but like in December. As a ritual, I normally give something up for December as to like prepare myself for the new year. And I was giving up
it's like
sex.
His version of Lent.
Yeah.
Lent.
I was gonna be celibate in December. And that's like one of the main reasons why we didn't hook up. Like because it was December 1, but we actually met on November, the last day of November. And then we had talked and hung out so long. It was December 1. And I was like, oh, I promised myself that I wasn't having sex in December. So that did not happen. We kept that promise pretty well until like the day before I had to go away for Christmas break, and then I was going to be gone for like 3 weeks. So we decided to do the do. But anyway,
consummate the relationship.
Consummate the relationship.
I guess the key is that neither of us were really looking or expecting it.
Maybe that's our problem, Val. We're always looking and expecting it. We're just going to pretend we don't want anything. Although I'm not sure if that worked for me for 10 years.
I mean, I'm tired of like getting on these apps and telling like complete strangers how my day was. Like how many times? And I wish you could copy and paste it more. Just like it was chill, whatever. And then like some of these guys can't talk for shit. Then sometimes they're or like you have to tell them what your fun plans for the weekend are. I'm like, I don't even tell my mom this. Why am I telling a complete stranger? So maybe, yeah, maybe I am sick of it. So maybe I will just stop giving a shit.
Okay, so y'all was in your hoe phase, and then you met, and then you dated. How did you know each other was the one?
With the other guys I have dated, they're, you know, when you're very mad and you're fighting and you get to that point where you just like can't stand that person. I don't recall if it was a specific fight or whatever, because we didn't like argue that much, but it was like one of our earlier fights. And I was like, oh, that I don't feel that. I don't feel the need to like cast you off at like, because, you know, you're dead weight or whatever. To me, but I didn't really feel that with Jason. And I was like, oh no, this is something that I want to, and I can see us persevering through. And no matter what the issues are that arise, it's trusting that we can persevere through that.
You had faith.
Yes. It was just like, I wouldn't even describe it as faith though, because it was just this assuredness that he and I were on the same page of whatever is happening, that we're just going to, like, leaving is not an option.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the note that I heard from that is like, if you don't yell, get out of my fucking house to your boyfriend, it's probably going to work out.
Good sign.
Essentially.
Good sign. Good sign.
How about you, Jason?
I think the biggest part for me was like, it's just life. Like every day, like going through life with this person, like we lived through COVID, like we've gone through like very big health scares with our family on both sides. We have gone through like me almost dying on a bus. Like it's a lot of things that we've gone through that are like really, really heavy. But then we also have had so many highs. Like Justin was the reason why I got to take my parents to Europe this past summer. And he is one of the first persons that made me like sushi. Like I didn't like raw foods before then. And like things I would never try or explore before. Like I allow him.
Fishy. Just kidding.
I allow him to push me to do so. And so I think it's just like doing life with people, experience the highs and some of the lows. We don't really argue. We learn how to give each other space. I really enjoy that aspect of Justin. Like one person told me a long time ago is like, your partner shouldn't make you happy. They should make you happier. Or they shouldn't be all your day, but they should make your day better. And I think that that is something I really, really feel when I'm with Justin. Like I would rather.
Like a Brené Brown quote. I would rather
stop encouraging him. That it's just, you just wake up one day and you're like, I want this person in my life for the rest of my life. And then from that point on, we just started talking about like, do we want to get married? Do we see this being forever?
And yeah, like, that's we started having that conversation like a couple years ago.
Yeah, I would say that we started having that conversation probably like mid-pandemic.
Like, Chris, have you ever had that feeling or do you connect to that?
The getting married feeling?
Yeah, or the one, or like you've been in relationships before.
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot, more than I would like to think about it, that there would be the one or the ones, like I said, like a long time ago, I've had that dream of being in the polycule, just like Captain Planet and his Planeteers. But I've thought about it, the ones, but getting there, that's the hard part.
I mean, I've had that feeling through all my relationships, no matter how bad they were. And maybe that's why, like, sometimes I think, like, because I was able to fool myself into that, that, like, it's probably why I'm like taking my time getting into relationships, because I was like, I don't want to fool myself into that again. It's like this idea of the one or the ones, or like, and we talked about this before. My therapist said thinks I have like a love addiction. And so that like fuels a lot of this like romanticism. But sometimes I'm like, what's life without the romanticism?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, my therapist said that. Can you give me a book to read? Like, are you addicted to love?
Addicted to love.
And it's just like, well, yeah, it could be nice. I'm like, you're already making me give up all these other addictions. So like, let me just have this one.
It's because you're Vietnamese. You feel more.
Yeah. Yeah, we feel it. We're a very romantic culture, so we feel more. Okay, so moving on from like the commitment to more fun topics.
Commitment is fun.
Lighter topics. Well, maybe this is a lighter topic. Moving on from commitment because it's heavy for me.
It's triggering.
Triggering for me. Hard turn. So talk to us about play. Like, how do you guys approach playing with each other? Are you guys in an open relationship? Are you guys monogamous?
We are in a version of an open relationship. Open relationship, I feel like, means a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you guys?
We are not looking for a third polyamory partner. A throuple. I don't think we've actually ever super explicitly talked about that.
Yeah, we have never.
But it was just kind of this mutual understanding from the beginning where...
We have one really good friend that's always with us, and we go on trips together and hang out a lot. So a lot of people in the community, specifically in SF, have come up to him and asked him if we were boyfriends with the particular individual. And he feels a certain way.
He's your adopted child.
Yeah, it's more of an adopted child.
It's much more of that
vibe
yeah.
than anything else.
But he feels a certain way because he wants to be in a relationship and engage with other folk, and they always think that includes us, but it does not include us in any sexual way. But we started off pretty open at the beginning of a relationship.
Yeah, I think I went into our relationship wanting an open relationship. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm not a particularly strongly sexually driven person, but I think I like the idea where sex doesn't matter as much as, like, especially in straight couples and in, like, heteronormative culture, like, how important sex is in terms of what it means in a relationship. I wanted to, like, detach that, especially growing up in a very conservative Christian environment. And, like, being gay and queer, it was, like, it allows you to kind of reevaluate what the importance is of all of the different things that they say is important in terms of relationship, of finding the one. I very cognizantly wanted to, like, step away from that.
And, I mean, I was entering the same way as in my ex was my first and did not, like, want to be open, like, wanted us to be just strictly monogamous. So when I entered the relationship with Justin, I was like, that's not something I want. Like, I want to, like, really explore, like, my sexuality and, like, really grow in that department. And we both decided that we were going to go on that adventure together. So at the beginning of our openness, like, it was just always together. It was like, anyone wants to hang out with us, do things with us. That was how it was when we were in LA, together.
Yeah. And we've actually been with more people together than I was by myself before dating him. So
I would say same. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say my whole face started with him. He's the hoe.
But that also obviously changed a lot when we started doing distance. How do we respond to, like, wanting to be open and wanting to be, like, sexually open, but also knowing that we see each other, what, 2 weekends a month? So, like, how do we really balance that off? And that's when we set up our own, like, parameters to what that was. And that was that we're just very communicative about it in general. Like, we tell each other before, after, we send each other pictures of folks. Like, we, like, let people know, like, let him, I mean, let each other know. It's not people, let each other know, like, what's going down, when is it going down. And then we also had a strict rule of, like, no, like, penetrative sex
in the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning. So it was like no penetrative sex. It was like, that's just reserved for us. And then the rest of the things that we could do with other people, as long as we just let each other know. Because me and Justin are very different when it comes to how we encounter, like, normally. Like, I would say 4 out of the 5 times I, like, encounter someone, like, I've been talking to them online for at least, like, a couple weeks, maybe months. Like, some of them have met Justin before. Like, I've invited him over for dinner, like, before I engage. And Justin's more like, Jason, I'm about to do something in 15 minutes. Here, let me show you who the person is.
I feel like my story is much more typical of Grindr usage rather than Jason. Like, Jason is very much a, let me get to know you and your whole life story. And then when you come over, let's, like, talk for an hour or two before anything happens. For me, I'm just like, oh, great. Okay, we're just going to go meet and, like, you know, do our thing and then we'll leave. Right, Bao, Chris? Isn't that like a more normal use of
normal? What's normal? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything is normal.
Everything is normal.
It's just what you're used to.
Maybe the stats might line up in your favor of like people.
Right?
That's a more popular approach.
See, thank you.
More popular approach. How about that?
More typical, more regular.
Yeah, again, from Doncha and I, who have very little experience or expertise in this at all. We should get another researcher on here. But yeah, I mean, I do think, yeah, I meet more guys who are from couples with that vibe than someone trying to know my deepest fears and traumas.
I don't know if I asked that specific question, but okay.
he gets to it, though.
You know, but that evolved again more recently last May. And I don't know, I really want to know this question to you. Because you, when I, right before I was going to London for that week, you said that it's okay if I like fuck someone. And I didn't know where that came from. Like you didn't, it wasn't like any particular reason. You were like, oh yeah, it's okay now if you want to do that when I'm not around. And I was like, why? I mean, I didn't say why. I just took it as, okay, cool. I can do it. But, what was the reason behind that?
This is couples therapy. Very publicly.
this is juicy.
I don't know. Because what had happened was that we were, well, one moment during long distance, Jason was hooking up with somebody and we were on a Zoom call together, you know, doing a thing. And then
you do that.
Jason had done like penetrative sex.
I asked.
No, you did not.
I did ask.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did. Oh, there was, yeah, another thing.
Yeah. I didn't use a condom. That was the issue. But yeah. Like, I did ask.
Yeah. And I was like, and then we had a lot of conversations about it. We reestablished our boundaries, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, I think it just took some time because I don't know if I was always never, but it was like a not yet sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was my boundary in the beginning. And then it was me kind of like coming to terms with this idea of like, what does penetrative sex mean? And like, does it actually mean more than any of the other kinds of sex? Right, that exist out there. And I think it just took some time for me to get used to that idea. And I ultimately was like imagining like, what if this did happen again? Like, how would I feel? And then I was like, no, I actually would feel fine with kind of reestablishing what our rule was in terms of our like our openness.
Yeah.
And so like I think I was ready for a while.
So it seems like it took a lot of reflection and then like it evolves. It's like a living and breathing thing, kind like, of.
I think like everything, a relationship more, especially because it's between two people who are always dynamic, right? Like people are always changing. Relationships evolve. And it's just finding a person that you want your relationship to evolve with and like who you want to grow with in that sense. Because if one of us stops growing in the way that the other person like is compatible with, then that's when we part ways.
Mm-hmm.
For now, at least, we have decided that we're growing in the same way, and we appreciate that.
I do love that because it makes me, I mean, I reflect a lot on my, like, my only open relationship that I've ever had was with my ex. When I think back on it, two things happened. One, our communication sucked, and two, we were doing it for the absolutely wrong reasons. Like, instead of working on some deep-rooted communication issues or, like, the gap that had widened between us because I lived in another country for 8 months and was really focused on my career and always working, that we thought somehow like, oh, I know what the solution to all our problems are. Let's have an open relationship, because it was kind of this shiny thing that like a bunch of our friends or all of San Francisco was doing. And it was like the shiny solution to like having our unmet needs met.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And yeah, we had rules, but we both broke them. And we both kind of like, because we had been on a kind of a rocky foundation of trust and faith in each other, the breaking of the rules like was just hurt that much more deeply. Mm-hmm. Like felt like much more of a betrayal. I remember being just really obsessed with the hooking up, like, because I felt like I haven't been on Grindr for 5 years, and I just felt like every hour I was checking Grindr for any messages, any dick pics to collect in my my hidden photo album. And then I realized like I was trying to figure out when he was just never going to be, like he was on a trip or he was working, because we had different work schedules, for me to like slot in the different like hookups and then like project managing my whole phase and spending all my time project managing my whole phase. But in the end, we just realized like we hurt each other more than we were just loving each other. Like we were not on this journey together. We weren't growing together at all. And that's when, you know, we decided to end it. Like I cherish this person because I spent every day and that person knows me much more than anybody else. If we continue on this path for a week or two, I might never speak to this person ever again because it was getting kind of bad. And so we just made the decision to be friends. And yeah, it took a while for us to actually be actual friends, but and we did. We're good friends now. I've met all his boyfriends. I love his current boyfriend. But I think about that experience a lot when people ask like, oh, are you into open relationships or could you do an open relationship later? And I would be like, I'm not close to it, but if I ever do it again, I have a lot to reflect on about how I did it the other time, because that was not a fun time at all. Like, it was actually pretty traumatic.
Yeah. I feel like the early days of gay open relationships is a lot like the hetero version is like having a baby, trying to save the relationship when it's not necessarily like the best thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying that it's bad. It's just, I think those early days, we didn't have the language for it that we do now.
I definitely wouldn't be able to articulate it the way you guys have articulated it, but it's also great to know that it's not something that you can plan for every scenario and create your rules based on that. It's just like, it's something you also learn from experience.
I would definitely say we also have had like, I can think of two major bumps in the road when it comes to all of it, from the beginning to like now, one really early on and one like rather recently. The first one was this particular person that Justin was engaging with down in LA had a partner. And I like to like get to know the person and like have conversations with the person and get to know them a lot better, I was starting to read that this person's partner didn't know about what was going on. And the guy was like posturing as if he did. And it was also a weird dynamic because the guy was a white guy with an Asian partner, which also like is somewhat triggering to me amongst like just interracial dating and like the power dynamics that happens amongst that, that I just felt really, really uncomfortable with that. And I think that was the only time that I've had a veto of like, Justin had a moment with this person beforehand. But then the second time when he was thinking about hooking up with the person, at those times, we were like, you can always have a veto. You can always say if you don't feel comfortable about it. And then he eventually did. I mean, I told him I don't feel comfortable about it. And then that person, anytime his partner was in town, like would completely ghost Justin. They used to like rock climb together. They used to do things together. And they were like, he would not talk to him at all. And then they eventually like, after that veto, like he never talked to Justin again. I don't remember.
They moved away.
So it was like a really weird experience for me of like, I don't want to limit you from doing something, but I don't think this person's a good person. And like, that is when it like bothered me. I don't know how you felt about it, but that definitely.
I mean, it was a hookup. I was not emotionally invested in this person. That was it.
I mean, I find that like great, like vetoes for the right reasons. Yeah. Some people are just gross people and you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I felt.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so outside of like open relationships and sex, what are, I know we were talking about some of the like hardships. What are some of other tough things that you have gone through as a couple?
Oh, so many. let's go through the list. Like 5 months into dating Jason, my sister had a baby shower And she was like, oh, you should bring Jason. And then I invited him. And then my mom was like, oh my God. I had been out to my parents for, at that point, like 10 years.
Since junior year college,
at least. And my mom was like, I can't believe you're bringing him. We can't go. We're not. And then like my parents were threatening not to go to my sister's baby shower.
First baby.
My sister's first baby because of the presence of Jason. I called my dad and I was like, if you choose not to go, this is going to change everything about your relationship with all of your children. And I am extremely lucky that I have a brother and sister who are staunchly like on my side for everything. And like, they have been so wonderful in terms of being supporters against my parents' homophobia. But it is, yeah.
The other thing that like supported that event was just seating, like placement of people. We put the grandkids that are already there in between the grandparents and the rest of the table and then me, which helped like just with the like separation of that. It was really sweet at the end of the time. Your mother did say, he seems like a nice boy, which I thought took as a strong compliment. I was like, I'll take it. Like everyone was, and the family was feeling really strong feelings about the parents not coming and like dealing with the homophobia. And I was like, that sounds like a small win, I guess, that she thinks I'm a decent person. Like that was how I took it when I left. Yeah.
And then what else? My dad had a stroke that was in the middle of the pandemic.
That was a big one.
That was crazy. And then active shooter.
Yeah, I was on the bus with the active shooter and like Justin drove up to the Grapevine from LA to wait outside for me and for like 3 or 4 hours outside, just waiting until the police released me and then drove me back home. Which was just like, that, to me, that was like one of the solidifying moments of like, this person would do anything for me. And because like, he's a teacher and Justin hates taking off from teaching because the kids go crazy. But he took off that day and the next day to make sure that I was okay. And then my brother drove me back up. So like, that was a big moment with us. Speaking on your parents though, particularly, his dad loves tennis and I love tennis. So like normally when we get together, all we talk about is like how's work for like two sentences. And then we just talk about like the ATP and WTA tour. So to me, it's just like chatting with one of the guys. And like, I think he uses that as a way to get over the fact that I'm the guy dating your son. Like, it's just, you're a guy that loves tennis and loves the same things that I love. I'm probably also the black person they speak to the most in their lives. So like, that's also something that you notice at certain times of like, his dad asked me if I liked rice once. And I love rice.
I'm just checking.
He likes sushi now.
He did it before.
That's an interesting way to navigate it, but it's no different than my mother immediately calling every Asian person Chinese. So like anytime something happens and like dealing with China, he was like, oh, does Justin know about that? Does Justin like that? And I was like, mom, he's not Chinese. He's Korean. And she was like, oh, so what part of China is that? Like, that is obviously my mother. Yeah, just more ignorant than like not trying to be hurtful, you know?
Well, maybe on that point, what's it been like for you both navigating all the communities that you're a part of, like queer, black, Asian, as a couple?
I would say in terms of the family dynamic, I knew this was going to be definitely not the primary thing that my parents were going to have an issue with, like outside of gender, but it was definitely uncomfortable for them. Mm-hmm. They just didn't know really how to interact with Jason. Like, the first time that they invited us over for a makeup New Year's dinner or lunch because they told us not to go to like the regular one because of homophobia, whatever.
Their church friends were going to
church friends, blah, blah, blah. And then it was very upsetting. And then they were like, okay, no, you should just come over for dinner. We'll have Jason over. Felt like a big moment. And then my mom just didn't know how to like cook food, because like the normal Korean dish is like the itakguk, right? And like, so and that's typically all you would make, right, is like the rice cake soup. And then
she also made
pizza
rolls.
and then she was like,
pizza rolls.
No. Yeah, she also made pizza rolls. And just like, It was definitely like the what do I have in my freezer that white people or non-Asian people eat, and like was hoping that Jason would eat that, and like just had no idea of what to serve. And so it was the most random smattering of food on the table. But Jason ate the tteokguk and was, you know, a good guest. So
was that your first time having that dish?
Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Did you like it?
It was good.
He cooked it recently.
I did cook it recently. Oh, yeah.
See, yeah. We all grow.
His sister-in-law is a really good cook, and she, when I was down there in LA most recently, she told me the recipe to use for the rice cakes, because I had some in the freezer, and I was like, I want to make that for Justin, and I made it, so it was really nice.
It was not New Year's.
It was not New Year's. It was just another day.
It sounds like since that moment, your family has come a long way then.
Yes and no. Neither of our parents are coming to our weddings.
So that's like a big
thing. That's like a thing. It like... We've now spent several Christmases at each, mm-hmm. like two Christmases at each,
yeah,
family, and then
my parents are actually coming here for Christmas after the wedding to stay with us. So it's like it's just more the permanence of
the relationship,
being
yeah.
married for my parents that are just uncomfortable.
The sanctity of religion,
exactly. But
are your parents religious too, Jason?
Yes, very religious. I went to church every Sunday when I was younger. I was a Sunday school teacher my first 2 years of college, which was the reason why I allowed to keep my car. I still consider myself pretty religious. Like, I'm the person that reads the Bible verses at my like same-sex marriage friends' like weddings, because they're like, oh, you're the closest to like someone, so mm-hmm. this is what we do. It's hard. It was really hard for me. And even when I said it to my friends that they weren't coming, they were surprised, because like I talk to my parents 2-3 times a week. Like, I still help them with like most of their bills or finances and things like that. But like, I have a really, really good relationship with my parents. And I thought that that would prevail more so than their particular belief in one thing. I think that's probably been the hardest thing that I had to deal with this year, is like understanding that what does it mean to like love someone unconditionally? And like, what is the line that my parents have drawn around that? Which is just thinking about it at full scale, like thinking about all of it, like it's really, really heavy at moments. And it's been helpful with Justin. And like, I know that he deals with his parents in a different way. And like also like chosen family and friend family and like all the other family that are showing up, different generations mainly, that has made it bearable. But like, there will be something missing from October because my parents aren't going to be there. And my brother's not coming either. So like, that's another like blow.
I'm not getting married, but in our family, let's just say like with my sister and I, there's something happening in my sister's life where she was talking about the possibility of getting married. She's been with her partner for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then it hit my mom. My mom just was like, just changed the subject. And so I followed with my mom, and she was like, you know, why does marriage matter so much all of a sudden? Like, she just was like dismissing it. And then when I dug down and I'm like, what is it that you're uncomfortable with? She's like, I think I just held on to the fact that your sister was maybe going to change her mind. Because I've seen her date a guy once, and so I thought like this was just a phase, and maybe I didn't realize that I was holding on to that. And if you said I can accept you and your sister 100%, I come from a place and a heritage where I can't. Where she said it like that directly to me, and I was like, okay, it hurts, but I'm gonna leave some space for her. And then like, even then, that's still a heavy thing for me to process. So I can't even imagine the amount of hurt or maybe even grieving that you both have to do because your parents are not coming. But, and this is why I spent so much time with my chosen family this summer. I was like, no one's ever going to accept me 100% like my friends or like my chosen family. Mm-hmm. And I realized like, I'm past the anger with my parents that they can't accept me 100% because it's their choice to change, not mine. But the privilege of having like all these people that really do know me, warts and all, flaws and all, like 100% still like love me and accept me. And it made me realize like, chosen family is important, and it can sound trite sometimes, but like I deeply felt that. Yeah. I deeply felt that in the absence of my parents being able to like accept even just like a hypothetical situation.
Yeah. It's hard to get to a point, and I don't know if I fully internalize the belief, but like the line I had told my parents when we had invited them was like, it's okay if you don't want to go, because I don't want you there if you're not going to be happy for me. you know, like if you can't be there and celebrate me and my relationship and mm-hmm. this joy, and I had to give them permission to not be there without worrying that they were going to ruin the family. Cause like, I know my brother and my sister are much more like burn the shit to the ground. Like, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of ally, which is so great in so many ways, but also just like, calm down. It's okay. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. there can be some nuance here, where, you know, you can tell them like, hey, like we can still all do Christmas together. And like, I'm not going to pretend like this isn't going to change the nature of our relationship, but I also just don't want I could force my parents to be there. I know I could, mm-hmm. like, because the, mm-hmm. the threat of ever seeing their children or grandkids again is over their head. And, you know, we could guilt them, but like, why would I want them to suffer an entire weekend? And why would I want them there feeling so stressed out that they are there and wanting mm-hmm. to not even let, you know, like even the way that our bodies are positioned now, like feeling awkward at our own wedding that are like to kiss, to put our arms around each other, to like, there are so many different layers to that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to believe that I'm like fully okay with that. And like some days I am and some days I'm not. And, you know, like, but like even what Jason was saying, it is I knew going into it that they were probably not going to go, but it still hurts, mm-hmm. you know, in that moment. Like they have hung out with Jason a dozen times. Mm-hmm. We have gone on trips together. We have done all these things. I went on trips with your family.
Your mom has embraced me without me asking for it.
you think your family is further than they are. And then it comes down to the moment where you want them to be at your wedding and then they don't show up.
When thing that my mom said in the final conversation we talked about the wedding is that I need more time. And mm-hmm. and I told that to Justin, and I mean, another reason why I love him is that he was like, we don't have to do this now. I know how much you care about your parents being there, so we can postpone it to next year. We can do it when we're 40. We can do it whenever, you know. And I was like, no, like I can't wait on their timetable. But and also in the same token, when I go home, I'm going to see them the day before we have our like Hampton reception, and I still will give them the last like out. I will text them the address of where we're going to be, and if they want to show up, they can show up. But I still like there is a slither of me still having hope in that situation.
Not a Hallmark movie. hoping for the Hallmark moment where they walk in at the last second.
I know, and I will break down and cry.
Like the Modern Family moment.
It's snowing.
It's not gonna be snowing.
It's okay. It's a Hallmark movie. Anything can happen.
But yeah, and so like I still, it's not gonna happen. But there is like a glimmer of hope that like someone is holding me, still tied to, I don't know, my parents a little bit in that way.
It's okay to hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's all we have. That's all we can actually do is hope. Mm-hmm. We can't hack the future and make sure that they come and they're totally cool with it. And it reminded me of like when I was talking to my mom, I was trying not to make her feel that guilty about being just so honest with me about it. And she's like, does it feel bad for you to hear me say this? And I said, it does, but mostly I'm just so sad of how deep of a system you've lived in where you can't love your kids the way I think you really want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn it around.
I knew, like, I think you both are hanging on and I hang on. Cause I think, you know, it's there because it's gotten so much better, but it's all these other external things that are really impacting them from getting there faster. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just want to tell my mom's like, well, just give me time. And she's cute. She's been watching a bunch of like LGBTQ content, like gay queer content on Netflix, to try to like understand my life.
She's
better.
Trying.
She's trying, but
so, yeah,
wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know,
even then it's still hard for her to like wrap her head around. Right. It is.
Yeah.
And my mom,
even with all of that,
it's funny because you think you come out, you're out to your parents, you can hang out with them, like you've hung out with them in different vacations, you talk to them all the time, they see you, they've had my queer partners have slept at my dad's place for Thanksgiving and stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. But you realize like this coming out process, this like your parents never like not really fully accepting you, is this gonna, for some people like us, it's just gonna keep hanging over us. You know, yeah. At some point you guys have like the resilience of just like making the decision for you guys. This is how I'm seeing it. It's just like, yeah, we're still going to do this. Right. Cause this is just what's right for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So strange. I've never like dreamt of the wedding. I'm always been kind of against weddings, but I'm in this weird place. Were I to, I don't think I would even invite my mom. And just for as many of the same reasons that you've mentioned, like, I don't want that bad energy there. I'm also technically not out to my mom, which I think is a surprise to a lot of people, given that I do drag, I'm out, I do activism, I'm facing the paper on television. She's just so in her own world. I've personally not felt like I need to force her through this thing that she just doesn't get. I also want to put out there, I think she has serious mental health issues, so I'm not going to put one more thing on her. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, for some reason, I don't feel bad about it. You know, my dad passed away a couple months ago. People always say, oh, I wish I had told him. I had this inkling of that feeling, but them being at a wedding, but I think some of that is because I'm told that's what I should want. Yeah. I don't, weirdly just don't care for them to be there. I don't know why.
I think that's totally, like, that's where you are, and I think that's wonderful, right? Like, and I think that's totally great, because, like, you are reflecting on it, you're thinking about it, and, like, even if you're wherever you are in the future, as, you know, even if you change your mind, like, I think this place where you are in your idea and your acceptance and your, like, reflection on that is where you need to be in terms of, like, mm-hmm. how you are approaching your relationship with your mom, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's probably like jump of the gun, because I also don't have a boyfriend yet.
So, you're still in between boyfriends.
Thinking a little too far ahead.
I was gonna say, if we want to jump back to like other like particular issues around like the us interracial dating, is something that we were talking with our friends. I think it was like my birthday, which was a couple months ago, actually last month. And my friend brought up like most of them are in like same race relationships. So like, two black guys dating each other, two Latinx guys dating each other, two Asian guys dating each other. And like the online like response sometimes me and Justin get is like completely opposite than what they normally get, because they are dating someone that's like of the same race. Like there's numerous times like I'll get black men hit me up online and they'll be like, oh, you're choosing to date this person. You know, like, do you hate black men? Do you like blah, 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 like all this really strong aggression towards it? Or vice versa, Justin's dating someone and they're like, oh, he's ugly, or he's blah, 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 blah. And like, do you not like certain other type of people? And our other friends were so oblivious to the fact that that happens to people. Like they were so unaware that like, that people really come at you in that regard. And
do people really say that just directly to you guys on Grindr?
Yeah.
More for you.
Or like in person?
I think I get it a lot from black men more online than I think Justin does. But you do get it sometimes.
I think there's an assumption that I don't find Asian, like from other Asian guys, that I don't like Asian men.
I mean, I know that to be untrue because I've made out with you.
It is all fair.
I mean, Chris and I have really felt this just like on TikTok. Like we posted the video once of just like asking someone what it's like to date a white guy, and everyone was just like, they obviously hate their race. Wow. And we're like, what?
Yeah, that's why we started a podcast about being Asian, because we hate ourselves.
Yeah, we hate our race. It's just like, okay. Like what I'm getting from this, obviously, and like, it's, I don't know, throughout some of this, you just got to figure out how you can move on with the parents, mm-hmm. with what people are saying about you. Like you really can't control all that, and you just gotta like keep it moving.
Yeah, because right? You live can never win. You're either like especially as a minority in the United States, you're always labeled, and we put these labels sometimes on each other as like you're a sticky rice, or like you're the kind of Asian that likes this kind of person or that kind of person, and so like you're often boxed into that. Mm-hmm. We have to live within these labels that are so constraining, and sometimes not that like hooking up with everybody is the ultimate goal or yeah. like whatever, mm-hmm. but then like it definitely does stop certain people from like even engaging with you just because of what they think you are into. Mm-hmm.
I used to think like you can't win, and I realized like the goal is not to win. The goal is not to care, because right, you can date another Asian, then people think you're only into a homogenized like right, relationship.
Exactly.
You're not comfortable. You don't like diversity. Mm-hmm. It's like you see the people see that like you're anti-black, you're anti-Latinx, you're anti all these other things just because of the absence of that. Mm-hmm. Or you date someone outside of their race, and I felt this is like, oh, he's not sticky. He hates his race. he hates himself. Is he from Ohio? Like, is this whole thing of like the Midwestern Asians hating themselves? Like, no, I've seen plenty of Midwestern Asians date other Asians and outside of their race as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's some truth to some of it in some of the people's experiences, sure, but it's like, you can't win, and maybe that's just not the point.
It's like we have to walk around with like a little poster behind us with pictures of all the people we've dated to get people off our backs.
And even then they won't. Then they'll look at that and they'll be like, have you
slept with them? Something's missing.
It's not a game about winning, and it's probably not a game I want to play at all. Now it's time to be real, which we're going to do differently this time by playing the card game We're Not Really Strangers. Justin, Jason, have you heard of this game?
Yes, we have. Oh. Jason loves buying things.
Oh, have you played it?
I think we've played the couples edition and we have those cards here.
You know how Jason was mentioning Truth or Dare before? Jason is really good at thinking of Truth or Dare, but whenever we have guests over, they're terrible because they're anxious. And so he gives them a deck of cards of questions that they can pull from.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And so he bought this. Yeah. We're really nice to our hookups.
Yes, you are. You really are. You're very generous.
Well, they're associates, okay?
Team members.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, it's a stack of cards. And when you flip it over, you have to answer a question. And the questions are there to help you deeply bond with each other, with your friends or your partner. And Bao and I and a bunch of our friends have been playing this a lot lately, sometimes to a fault, but we tend to know a lot about each other and sometimes our deepest and darkest fears or happinesses.
I think we mentioned we played this during Coachella when we were coming down from the Molly, and the Molly kind of just helps because like you don't overthink. Yeah, it's the Molly talk. You don't overthink and you really just say what's on your mind because you feel everything's safe. But we're not on Molly right now. And these cards, they come in levels. So level one's like really simple questions, like icebreakers, really. Like, what's your favorite ice cream?
What's your favorite color?
Yeah. What's your favorite ice cream? What's your favorite color? But I've pulled out cards from level 3. So it's the expert level.
The public podcast level, really.
I think we've talked about deeper things than these cards are going to bring out, honestly. So I have a few cards here. Why don't you pick one of the cards? And I'm going to read the question behind it. And we are all four of us, going to answer it.
Oh, my God.
The third one?
Yeah.
Let's do the third one.
Okay. Is this the third one?
That's the third one.
Okay. All right. We picked the third card and it says, what's been your happiest memory this past year? Take a moment to think about it. Maybe I'm going to ask you to go first, don't you?
You know, it's interesting because I've been complaining about being laid off, but it has given me the surprise opportunity to spend more time, so cheesy, with my chosen family so much more. Because, you know, who has all this, like, time off to travel the world for everyone's birthday, see the sights? But what I've loved about it and what I had discovered about myself in the last few years is that I don't like to travel by myself or spend that much time alone. I like to be with others. And it's funny that you say that we're at Coachella and played this game because in recent memory, that's a moment I hold very dearly to my heart where, yeah, I like to go out and party, but it was awkward at first. I was like, I really got to learn something about somebody that about these things that don't come up very often. You're not going to sit at Coachella Fairgrounds and ask somebody, what made you cry the most this past year? We do that. And, you jump past the awkwardness. And I really love that moment. And I think about it often. So, yeah, not playing, but getting to know my friends more because I know that they're the ones who are supporting me much more than, like everyone knows, not my family so much. What about you?
I think I would share that. I think I have two answers because I think one's like on drugs, which I feel like sometimes is cheating, and then one's like not on drugs. So for me, it was the happiest I felt, like I was like, this is the most happy I've been this year, was when I was on acid at Coachella watching the Bjork set. I don't know, everything just hit perfectly that day. It was Sunday where it was like, I wasn't expecting to have any of like this serotonin left. And it was just the perfect marriage of the creativity of Coachella, or like feeling like Coachella is where like the arts or like creativity is at, and like how many decades I love Bjork, and just like being really grateful that Bjork is in this world, like someone weird like Bjork is in this world, so that like just like the weirdos like that, the geniusly weirdo people can be successful and be on the main stage of Coachella. I don't know, something about that just really ignited like this creative spark in me, I guess, and I just felt like super happy. But sometimes I feel like that's cheating because I was like on acid and having an actually good trip. I would say I felt really happy recently, like on the not on substances part. I like played tennis with my dad yesterday, and I was just extremely happy. And I think the context of this story is that he has been going through some crazy health issues for the past year, and I think going through those health issues with his like two best friends dying had made him really depressed. Every time we hung out, there was like a cloud hanging over him. And plus like every discussion we had was about like planning for life after him. And it was just this really, and I've talked about it on the podcast, really somber. And I just like, oh, I lost like my dad used to be so funny and confident. And there's the brute happiness to him that's very Vietnamese, very working class, but that it was lost and he was just depressed. And I was like, well, what? And for me, I worry because sadder, older people honestly die faster. So I was like in a place of a lot of worry. And only recently did his health issues come to pass and everything's fine. And like the jokes are coming back. He loved tennis, played tennis for decades, but stopped playing tennis during this time because he had this weird fear of falling and then like never coming back to normal, because that's what happened to my grandma. And so he's playing tennis again. And so yesterday I was just like, wow, like I've seen so much in this world. I've had so much privilege to see much in this world. And why is this like the happiest I've been in a long time? And it's like just a simple act of playing tennis, you know, in a weird Orange County park in the afternoon of a Thursday, because I'm unemployed and a bunch of people have said no to me. And I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life or my career. And so I just had this cheesy live, laugh, love feeling. Like I felt like a walking gratitude journal. And it just made me really happy. I just owned it. So that was kind of the last time.
I'm not crying. You're crying. That's so sweet. I love that.
I'll go. When I was 8, I wrote in a time capsule that I wanted to take my parents to Europe when I turned 30. And I finally made good on that this summer. The like reason why we're going is I won tickets to Wimbledon, and I wanted to take my parents to get those tickets to go to Wimbledon. And we ended up doing 5 days in Paris and 5 days in London. Justin was really, really great with my parents. So it was like, had my parents and my favorite person with me. And we really like did all the touristy stuff, which is cute. My parents hated the food in France, but loved the food in London. They saw some great shows. They saw the Tina Turner musical in West End, as well as like the Temptations musical. And then my dad's first tennis tournament that he's ever seen live was Wimbledon, which is unbelievable and amazing.
We've ruined him,
yeah, basically. But then on the way back, my mom, who this was her second flight ever. The only other time she's flown is California and back. She now, this is the other flight, was flying overseas. She reached across the aisle from me and she like looked at me and she was like, this is the best trip I've ever been on. And she's like, I don't want to cry, but thank you. And she squeezed my hand so hard. And I was just really, really just taken back by it. Like she would never have saw that part of the world if I didn't take her there. And I'm so glad that she got a chance to do so. She had a knee replacement recently, and was walking really, really poorly. And like, we had to figure out ways to get her around, and I had to find like wheelchairs when we could. But like,
she was a trooper, though.
She was a trooper.
For somebody with such a pain hip and knee.
Yeah, it was such a pain
hip and knee.
Hip so and knee. Yeah. Like, well, yeah. Wow. I was just so happy that I could do that for them, and it was
And yeah. she said that to you in the middle of like our third delayed flight mm-hmm. on the third day of flying.
She's trying to fly back. It took
United is the worst.
72 hours in Newark. We were in Newark for 72 hours.
I've been stuck in Newark before for, 72 hours. From a Europe trip too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, it is purgatory. That's what Newark is.
What you, babe?
I think, Chris, like yours, mine is about chosen family and February every year we do a birthday trip with a bunch of our friends who all have birthdays late January, early February to, where is it?
Sea Ranch.
And this last one, we were all just sitting around the table playing a game and just crying, laughing. And it's just that moment that you can't really replicate and you can't force, but it's just like, it's just so, so good. And it's just so rich and a memory that we will all have and hold together forever. Mm-hmm. And it was just pure joy.
It was picture telephone. So like you write a word and then you draw a picture and then you write it and like, and see what it looks like at the end. And like, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, everybody's on the same wavelength. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's that mm-hmm. kind of matching of energy that is rare. And that you have to hold dear, and like exactly what you're talking about before, about the people who are always going to love you and support you no matter what, and that like it's not always necessarily in the moments where you're talking about, you know, why were you crying, like even though those moments are also important, it's about mm-hmm. having the joy and sharing that as well, and really sharing that moment together and being and knowing that you can have that together is it was just so beautiful for me.
I love those moments, like when you could just like a week later, just walking down the road and then like just laughing to yourself because you thought of something.
Yeah, because and it's a joke that you can never replicate. You can't tell anybody else.
When we're 80 on our porches or something, don't you? We're gonna bring up like, remember Coachella 2023?
Like, exactly. Inside joke that nobody gets.
Yeah, and it's funny because I do remember this one time with my friends in San Francisco. I just moved to San Francisco. We did play this game, but in a certain way. Where, like, I think someone had to draw like a scene that like was passed down by a couple of people, and I still have this like the image of that like saved on my phone as my favorites to laugh once in a while. But it will make sense to absolutely nobody else. It makes absolutely no sense, like sometimes even to me, but just the moment. And he's like, it reminds you of that moment. And like, yeah, my mom often used to say when we were growing up, like, nothing's thicker than blood. I'm like,
I know. I feel that's so old school.
Yes, and. Oh, I love this game. And I think that's a great place to wrap the episode too. So Jason and Justin, thank you so much for being on here. And now you're the poster queers for relationships.
Look for our commercial.
October. You're the brochure couple. And congrats on your wedding. And I can't wait to join you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you both for inviting us.
Thanks for having us.
So if you want people to find you, where can people follow you on the socials?
He rarely looks at his Instagram. My Instagram is jmblack8888, but I don't think he ever looks at
it. I don't know my handle.
Wait, there's four eights now?
Is there more? It's not only two?
It's just two. Oh, yeah. jmblack88. I thought you said jmblack8888.
No.
Oh, I think it's
just two. This is the conversation of old people talking about the internet.
Exactly. Yes.
What's my handle?
If you follow
again?
Him, you'll find me.
Yes. Okay.
Is this Yuntae something? 13. Yuntae 13.
Yes, it is. And if you want to follow us, you can find us at Literally Gaysians on TikTok and Instagram.
And you can find us for our last few episodes. I think there's two more episodes left this season, don't you? Which we're excited to bring to you guys. And till then, bye.
Thank you. Bye. See y'all soon.
Take care.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.